On this episode of the podcast, Todd interviews Greg Anderson of Southern Lord Records. For more information, check out their website at southernlord.com.
Hi guys, this is Todd from South Loop Strength and Conditioning, and today I have Greg Anderson on the old Skype machine with me. And Greg is actually the owner of a record label called Southern Lord Records that has released quite a few metal and hardcore experimental drone records and all that type of stuff. They've been active since 1999. Greg plays in two well-known bands called Sun and Goat Snake. These bands are pretty well-known as far as experimental drone. In the case of Sun, Goat Snake is more of a Black Sabbath-influenced doom metal type of project. Greg has also been in tons and tons of different bands and projects, collaborated with assorted music freaks like Scott Walker, Boris, Attila has been involved with quite a few Sun records from Mayhem. So you can check him out on Encyclopedia Metallum for an extensive list of all of his projects that he's been involved with. And Greg is actually going to release my band's record coming up at the end of March. So Greg and I have known each other via the internet and briefly in person for a few months now, and I thought it'd be really cool to actually talk to Greg about kind of the back-end stuff that goes on with independent music and independent record label. Since even though that may not be what we normally talk about on this podcast with, you know, strength training and CrossFit training and recovery and rehab and business and all that type of stuff, but I think there's a lot of fascinating crossover here, especially given my background growing up playing in bands and all that type of stuff. So, Greg, thanks for hanging out with me, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited. It's just somewhat different than what, you know, usually the usual interview platform. So I'm stoked. Thanks for thinking of me on this.
Of course, man. I mean, and you know, there's a little self-serving interest here too, in the sense that this Like Wrath record is coming out, and you know, we'll link to that in the show notes and all that type of stuff. But you guys can check that out. We have a track streaming right now, and we'll have a full album stream up at some point as well. But yeah, man, I think that this will be cool. I mean, I was going through a bunch of your interviews, you know, kind of researching for this, just what questions have people been asking, all that type of stuff. And I think we can hopefully hit some new topics, you know, as far as the background of the label and all that type of stuff. But mm-hmm. Let's first talk about, I mean, for my interest, a lot of it lies in, you know, I'm a music freak personally, just in terms of mm-hmm. always checking out music, writing riffs, being in bands, things like that. And I think something that's interesting to me is with all your different projects and things like that, how do you actually create the music, right? Is it with Sun and Goat Snake and all that type of stuff? Is it a collaboration? Do you guys jam? Do you guys improvise? Does one person show up to practice and say, like, all right, guys, like, here's the riffs and we're just going to play it this way? What does that process look like?
Well, for both bands, it's actually pretty different. Goat Snake's kind of more of a traditional, you know, it's a rock band, really, heavy rock band. So, you know, the structures of the songs and, you know, the format or the framework of all the songs is, you know, rooted in a very traditional structure of music and blues and rock and metal. But you know, Goat Snake had it's kind of a band that's sort of been on and off for the last, really for the entire lifespan of the group. And that's because everyone in the band has a lot of other things going on, whether it's family or work or other bands. So, it, you know, hasn't been a very consistent, group, but recently we kind of reconvened and, with the intention of making some new songs because we'd been asked to play like some of these festivals, and it was, you know, it was kind of like we didn't want to turn into a nostalgia act, you know, it was just like relying on the songs that we wrote 15 years ago or whatever, and playing those over and over again. We wanted to write new music together. It's gonna be fun to do, for one, and really to, you know, for us, like, to keep this thing interesting and moving forward, we wanted to write some new music. So the process of writing new music for Goat Snake was really just sort of myself and the drummer mostly just throwing ideas back and forth. Usually it's me that brings in sort of the meat of the song or the riffs, and then the arrangement is kind of put together by both of us. But then our vocalist, Pete Stahl, he was also involved this time around too. He was you know, especially with like the actual where the verse goes, where the chorus goes, things like that, kind of the nuts and bolts of the actual songwriting. So that's kind of Goat Snake, but Sun is more sort of based off of improvisation, and it's really sort of kind of the chemistry between Steve and O'Malley, the other guitar player, and myself, and you know, there's no rehearsals for the group. The only time that we're basically, if we are getting together, if there is a rehearsal, it's really trying to try out gear before a tour to make sure everything works because it's a very massive backline. So it's really, that's really kind of the main, the main thing about if we do get together before a tour. Sometimes it's like we get together at the sound check before the show, and then that's when we'll try out the gear or figure out what we're gonna, kind of roughly what we're gonna perform that night. But that's because everyone in the group lives in different places. I'm the only person that lives in the United States now. Everyone else lives in Europe. Steven lives in Paris. Our keyboard player lives in Amsterdam. And our vocalist Attila, he lives in Budapest. So, the distance between all of us doesn't allow us really to practice. But it's not really kind of the band what the band is about. It's more, like I said, an improvisation. So the actual songwriting or creating of the music is, again, based off the improvisation and there's usually somebody, either Steven or myself, will bring in an idea or like a concept, and we work around that. And we, usually it's in the studio that we will create new music, and kind of in the moment, which is really, really to me, like a really exciting way to do things. Especially, it's kind of cool to me. For me, Goat Snake is a very traditional way of playing and writing music, and Sun is a very unorthodox way. So they're kind of all almost at the opposite extremes of each other. But there's, of course, very common thread in a lot of the influences and the tone that's used. And it's coming from my brain. So there's a lot of similarities there, like you can hear, you can hear some of the common things with the style of riffs or the tone of the riffs,
Sure. Yeah, and then related to that, I guess in both bands, how do you have quality control over what you release, right? Because, in Goat Snake's situation, it's a little different in terms of saying, okay, cool, we're going to write this song, and then we're going to iterate it as we bring more people in, and then we're going to be like, you know what, that chorus is too long and short. You can kind of change all that stuff. And obviously with Sun, it's more improvisational. But in both cases, especially with Goat Snake, where it's like, you have these records that are over a decade old that are classics of the genre at some level. And it's like, okay, you're adding another piece to this. How do you say, this holds up to our, our name that we're putting out there?
Well, as far as Goat Snake is concerned, there was a lot of, we put a lot of time and effort into this last record that we released, which was our first record that had been released in, like 15 years. So, we worked with that. We actually worked with the producer in Nashville that we had worked with on our second album in Los Angeles. So he ended up moving out to Nashville several years ago and starting up a studio there. So he was somebody we really wanted to work with. So he was also very important with everything. We had everything in my, we really rehearsed a lot before we went out there. And we had everything, to me, like, very solid, and there was just a few ideas, and actually there was even some pre-production that was done on that record where he came to Los Angeles. Funny story is he was working on the – he was producing the new Bush album in Los Angeles. Nice. And he was like, hey, man, you know, I'm in town and this session is you know, it's kind of in – you know, sometimes I'm working, sometimes I'm not. It's just I can never tell. But I'd like to come down and see you guys rehearse pre-production. I can – with the songwriting here and there if you guys want. So he did that. He came down and listened to what the songs that we had – that we were going to basically end up recording with him later. So that was helpful. So there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of planning that went into that particular, that album.
Sure.
So it was, you know, but you know, with Sun, it's more sort of, you know, it's just maybe like a few core ideas that we'll bring into a recording studio and then we'll work on it from there and build on it. And sometimes like the collaborators that end up being on the record, the different instrumentation, a lot of that, it really isn't preconceived. That's kind of comes in as things are developing in the studio. We hear something and somebody has an idea like, hey, wouldn't it be great to put some horns here or some strings here or something like that, or there needs to be some synth here or something like that. So it really sort of organically develops and over time in the studio. There's not really, no one will come in with something completely written and completely conceptualized and all done and just tell people what to play. That's not the way the group works, you know.
Sure. So with Sun, how much stuff, I guess, ends up on like the cutting room floor? Because I'm thinking of, I mean, are you familiar with Acid Mother's Temple, for example?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, that band is just outrageously prolific, and they have amazing releases, and they have horrible releases, and they have stuff kind of in between, and there seems to be like no quality control in terms of what they put out. It's just like, all right, like, here's another one, like, go for it, guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you guys decide, like, okay, cool, this is actually good enough to release, you know, this is getting what we want to, or like, you know what, like, cut this part, cut that part. What does that process look like?
Well, there is a lot of stuff that doesn't make it. I mean, because really, like, when we go into the studio, we really sort of just let the tape run, so to speak. And it's more about a lot of the records are really heavily edited. There's, you know, there'll be like some really, we'll just basically play and, we'll go back and listen and there's key moments that happen that we try to pick out and edit. I mean, some stuff's not edited at all. Some stuff's played as it, you know, it's recorded and even, you know, the final song or piece is exactly how we recorded it. But a lot of the Sun stuff, especially on the last two records that we've done, Canon and Monoliths and Dimensions, it's about finding those kind of key moments and key parts of, you know, I'm talking about like between a 20 and 30 minute piece, you know? And so we basically will pare that down in, you know, somewhere anywhere between 10 and 15 minutes usually, you know, depending. But so there's a lot of kind of stuff that's done after the recording that is just as important as far as the final piece of music. And a lot, you know, like I said, a lot of that's editing. And then there's a lot of layering that happens as far as like, okay, we're going to add some instrumentation to this, you know, or add a different collaborate with someone else on this piece. So a lot of that's done sort of later. And it's really everything for Sun starts with the core of Steven and I, the two guitars, or sometimes it's bass and guitar, but that's where it starts. And then it's kind of built upon, from there.
Sure. So when you're going through that editing process, is that you and Steven kind of sitting there at the, you know, Pro Tools or whatever, firing through stuff, mm-hmm. or is everyone involved in the record there? Is there one lead creative voice on that, or is that also a collaborative process?
That's a collaboration. Well, and that's a collaboration, Steven and I, and then our, the engineer producer, which is, we've worked with the same person for several years now, which is this guy, Randall Dunn. He was also our live, sound person for many years until just recently. And he decided to step away from doing live sound and just concentrate on studio work. But, he's very important part of it as well. I mean, most of it, you know, it's kind of Steven and I are sort of the, you know, the, the majority of it, but he's very skilled and he's got great ideas as well. So it's sort of, you know, it ends up being a lot of the decisions are sort of, you know, mutually between the three of us. But we're all very hands-on as far as the final thing. There's never a moment where we're not with Stephen and I, or at least one of us is there to, oversee what's going on. That it's always, we're always involved. So, I mean, that's kind of why, you know, from a technical standpoint or what, you know, what you see on the records, it always says produced by Sun, because that's, we don't leave the recording studio, and leave it into someone else's hands. We're always sort of, we're very hands-on with that. As much as possible. And like I said, sometimes one person will step out based on if they got something going on in their lives. Like for me, it was like, I've got three kids, so there's been times where I've had to step out because of family obligations. But it's always, you know, we're very hands on about it. And it's, you know, to me, honestly, the group, I think some of this has to do with kind of our upbringing into underground music, especially hardcore and punk rock. Is everything we do is total DIY. I mean, we don't have a management. The only thing that only outside help that we have for the group actually is a booking agent. So everything else that we, you know, all the finances, you know, every decision and every move that is made with the group, made by us, like mutually agreed upon decision. And we do everything ourselves. So we handle our, you know, we put out our own records on the Southern Lord label. We have our own merch store that we run and do the fulfillment for. So it's very, everything we do from from starting with the music and the way it's presented to all the business and everything like that is very, is handled. It's all hands on. It's all us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And then sort of in that vein, right? I mean, you mentioned the hardcore and punk background, right? Where I think a lot of that DIY culture grew out of, well, no one is going to do this for us, so we have to do it ourselves. And then simultaneously, that gives you more creative control, right? You have control over your image. You have control over, what you're going to spend on XYZ. You don't have to give a cut of whatever you're doing to some management company, all that type of stuff. So there's a lot of benefits to that DIY mentality if you have, you know, the wherewithal to get it done. So can you give me just a basic history of Southern Lord as far as getting that started, since that label is also run similarly, right?
For sure. And, you know, Sun is an extremely important part of the label. But I mean, basically, I grew up in Seattle and played in a lot of bands there. And that's where Stephen and I first met and started playing music together in the mid 90s. We had a band called Thor's Hammer together that was kind of a very slow death metal band, very, very influenced by Hellhammer and Celtic Frost. And,
I'm gonna interrupt you and tell you that I first heard Thor's Hammer and I didn't know that it was you, right? I was aware of Goatsnake and Sun and all that, and I heard Thor's Hammer just like independently and was like, this is insane, like I love this so much. And then at some point I like made the connection where I was like, wait, holy shit, this is the same guys, like what's going on here? So anyway, go on. Sorry.
Pretty raw stuff. So we started that. That was the first time we started playing music together in like, I think it was 1994, 95 that we did that. And it was a very short lived band because the vocalist was, she was this Norwegian exchange student and she, her program basically ended. and she moved back to Norway. So the band, dissolved after that. But, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So after that band dissolved, we formed another band, without her, she was gone, called Burning Witch. It was kind of continuing on into the same vein as Thor's Hammer, but it was more, the music was a little bit more developed. And it was, you know, really kind of embracing doom a lot more, especially like we were really into I Hate God and St. Vitus and Winter. And so the songs were, I think the songwriting was a little bit more mature than our first group together. So both bands had recorded material, and then I moved to Los Angeles to I just needed a change. I needed to get out of Seattle. I had an opportunity to play with some musicians down here, which ended up becoming Ghostsnake. Left, and those recordings basically sat. There's a few labels that were interested, but nothing ever happened. And the bass player for Ghostsnake was a huge fan of those records, and he was like, "Man, you got to get these. You got to put these out." I'm like, "Yeah, it'd be great. I just don't have any money." So he actually loaned me the money. He goes, "I'm going to loan you the money. You pay me back in 1 year." I'm like, "Okay, cool." So we did it, and
did you guys sign a term sheet on that?
No, just, you know, he was just a good friend and super, super into the music, and sure. And you know, really smart dude. And it's funny, that guy now runs the European office of Southern Lord. So, you know, we've remained friends for all this time, and he, you know, he's really into the music and gets it. And he's a family, he's like a family member, you know. So, anyways, he loaned me the money, and the whole point at first was just to get those two recordings out, the Thor's Hammer demo and the Burning Witch demos, and that was it. You know, I was like, okay, let's get these out, and hopefully we make our money back, and I can pay off my loan and to my friend, and then that was it. But the response was so strong, and people really got into it, and it really sort of inspired me to keep going and do some more stuff. So. You know, I was able to pay back that loan, and then just kept it going from there. And it was really so. I mean, at first, you know, the kind of the aspirations were extremely modest, and we just wanted to get those two CDs out. You know, it wasn't even vinyl; it was just CDs. And it, like I said, it kind of created this domino effect where it's like really was inspiring by the response that we were getting, and people were getting really into it. And we had some other cool ideas of other releases that we wanted to do. And we just kept it going. And that's kind of how it's been, you know, ever since. We've been inspired to keep this rolling, you know, and keep the momentum going, and really grateful that we've sort of, you know, we've been able to, people have gotten really into it. And we have a following of people that are into what's on the label, you know?
Sure. So it's kind of like you made music you wanted to hear, and then you figured out a way to put it out yourself, and just sort of struck the right chord with the right group of people, and pretty quickly realized, like, hey, listen, like, this is something that that people want, that we can provide, and just kind of snowball.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it was also, you know, I mean, there's like, you know, it's really, you know, you're talking about being you know, obsessed with music and new music. I mean, that's how I've always been, really. I mean, and that's what really sort of got me into underground music, is because, you know, I was like a kid that grew up listening to AC/DC and Van Halen and Led Zeppelin, and when I first heard Metallica, I got the Kill 'Em All record, and that was kind of the game changer for me at that point, because it really sort of opened my eyes to all this underground music. And you know, eventually from Metallica and Slayer and things like that, then I discovered hardcore. Sure. Then, you know, it was like kind of like, it was like this thing, like, okay, I'm on a quest to see what the fastest music there is, because I was so into hearing fast music. I thought it was incredible, you know. It was a revelation to me. And then it was like, you know, when I first heard Kill 'Em All, I was like, okay, this is the fastest. It doesn't get any faster.
Can anyone ever play faster?
Yeah, no one's gonna top that. And then, you know, and then I met some. There were some kids at my high school. They're like, dude, that's not even fast.
Sorry, even fast.
DRI, yeah. So then I heard DRI and COC and some of these, you know, a bunch of the old hardcore bands, Dekreuzen and all this stuff. And it's like, so it just, you know, really kind of opened up the floodgates. Like, but that passion for music is something that's kind of always sustained for me. And it's that's kind of, you know, I was really into in the 80s, once I got into punk and hardcore and underground metal stuff, I was really into tape trading. And so it kind of, to me, like, this label is sort of like you know, tape trading on steroids in the modern day and age now for me, where it's like I really still really like this music and I'm really excited about sharing it with people and turning people on to the music and being turned on to other music myself by, you know, either discovering it or, you know, somebody, a friend or somebody suggesting something to me. So it's that's kind of where, you know, it's still is today what it was back in, you know, 97 when we were, 98 when we were trying to put out our first, you know, put out these first CDs, you know?
Yeah. The scaling up and systematizing the tape trading into a label is, I mean, that makes perfect sense, right? It's just like, cool, this is what I'm into. You should check it out. Like, I guess I'm going to send this to a few thousand people rather than just my few friends.
Totally. Well, and it's also, you know, the inspiration really kind of comes from, you know, you know, seeing what other stuff that's coming out on other labels. I mean, a lot of it's, you know, and I'm not gonna name anything specific labels or bands, but I just see a lot of stuff. There's a lot of garbage out there, man. You know, and it's kind of like, I'm not saying that, you know, we're the best in what we do, and we're you know, everyone else is most people are shit. I would never say that. It's just I think that a label, independent label run by musicians, to me sort of has an advantage to a label that's not run by musicians in several ways. I think there's that connection to the music and playing it and the kind of the empathy that you have with other musicians that bigger labels or labels that aren't run by musicians don't have. And that's kind of one of the things that I really, you know, what to me sets our label apart from a lot of other labels and what we do. There's a lot of true passion in what we do and other labels that are run by musicians, but not really seeing that same sort of enthusiasm in some of these other independent labels that aren't run by musicians. And I think that it's not that they're not putting out good stuff. I don't see that, but their focus and motivation is a lot of times way more financial driven than a true passion for the music, and wanting to play play that music and be involved in the actual creation music. It's a lot more, I think, more it's like I said, I think it's more financially focused. There's nothing wrong with that. I think me, where I'm standing, you know, that's sort of what drives us also, is like, you know, yeah, is this true passion for the music, you know what I mean?
Sure. And then kind of,
I guess what I'm trying to say, yeah, is we don't really make, you know, for better or for worse, we really don't make decisions based on whether it's going to actually sell or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, we've been really lucky. We've had some artists on the label that have done extremely well, and it's really helped us. It's obviously made all the difference. But I like all that music. I'm not putting out a record because it will sell. I have turned down so many records that like have gone on to do extremely well, and it's been like, and you know, people that know me and know, and maybe I've told the story about the, you know, that band, and they're like, man, are you regretting that? Are you kicking yourself? That band's huge. You could have made a fortune. It's like, no, I don't like the band.
Yeah, I don't like the record. Whatever, man.
I don't like the band. I can't stand behind that like that. So, you know, and I know a lot of other labels, that's not the case. It's like, hey, man, this is going to make us a lot of money. Let's do it. I think that's one thing that, you know, for, like I said, for better or for worse, you know, we probably could have been a lot more successful if I would have taken the opportunity when it was, you know, in my hands. But that's not really what it's about for me. I can't stand behind something that I don't completely love and think it's killer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. For sure. And then on that note, I guess with marketing, right? So in my industry with CrossFit, marketing is kind of like a dirty word almost. It's like, oh, like that's that sleazy bullshit. Like, fuck that. You know, the quality of our product has to stand for itself, which at some level I'm sympathetic to, but at another level, you know, you need to do something to get people to be aware that your product is good. And I see something similar, yep, in the music industry, right? Where it's like, yeah, you want to put out the bands that you like. You want to, you know, with your label only put out stuff that you stand behind. But how do you approach, I guess, marketing without sort of crossing that line of like doing stuff you're not comfortable with or ethically doing something that you don't agree with?
Just kind of just go with a lot of that stuff, kind of go with, and also the wallet. Wallets, the money. I mean, you know, so the Lord has run. You know, all our deals with our artists are based on a profit split. So it's really sort of, it's kind of a party put in the end to get the best. With that said, I really try to be mindful of I'm actually pretty extremely conservative with spending with advertising like that and these different, you know, co-op programs with record stores and things like that. I will only do it if it's a news area. I mean, there's a lot of labels that basically have a formula. It's like, well, you're going to spend much money to send to this much, but it turns it into a gamble. And I just don't, you know, I don't feel comfortable doing that with the records. I don't think it should be, it's not a gamble. It's a piece of art that needs to be handled, with respect and carefully. And you don't want to, you know, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. So I'm always very conservative with things. And, you know, I've actually had issues with bands where they thought I wasn't spending enough money. And then at that point, well, it's like, okay, well, we can talk about opening up the wall a little bit more if that's what you really feel about it. I wanted everyone to be satisfied with what's going on. But, you know, I think most people respect what we're doing and respect the fact that we're conservative, because there's a lot of, you can kind of get yourself into some traps. There's like basically a lot of stuff that's just kind of pre-designed and set up to take your money, but it's, you're not really going to see much of a return, or it doesn't really mean anything. You know what I mean? It's not really going to result in sales. You know what I mean? It's just, it's like I have a lot of issues personally with press and magazines and the way that they're kind of set up and their design. It's kind of a pay-play game. That I think is lame, you know. I really don't care for a lot, majority of magazines that are out there. Especially these days too, to me, playing field is being completely level with the online zines, because now a lot more people are going to those. And I think it's the same shame was, you know, I'm kind of like a fanzine myself, but there's a lot of those left anymore, unfortunately. Sure. Because it's all online now, and you can hear anything at your fingertips, and you can find out about anything really easily online. So, picking up a magazine like we would do in the 80s and the 90s, that's how I found about a lot of punk and hardcore, Maximum Rock and Roll, and Flipside Magazine, and shit like that. It's like that's how you find out about stuff, but you don't need that anymore, you know, better for worse. It's like now you have more control, and you're being exposed to more through online. So that to me is free. So sure, you don't spend money on advertising and stuff like that with these magazines and kind of playing their games so that they'll feature your ads. I think it's bullshit, to be honest with you. So, but yeah, I mean, bottom line, we're conservative with it. we're very careful, because it's not just our money, you know. I look at it as the band's money too, and their art. So I try to be very respectful and careful with it.
And then, sort of on that note, you're effectively saying that, you know, Southern Lord is your curated selection of music for people to listen to, and then mm-hmm. you know, based upon your track record, the bands you've been in, you sort of have a tribe of followers, right? They're like, dude, Greg Anderson, like, if he likes it, I want to know about it. So that's, you know, that's kind of the, at some level, living the dream, where you sort of built up this this tribe of folks who want to hear what you have to say. Do you do anything, I guess, to create that group or to drive that beyond just, you know, doing a good job and putting out stuff that you want to hear?
I don't know. Yeah, I think that's pretty much, you know, they kind of nailed it in a way. I mean, I got to say, man, I mean, that's something that I don't take lightly. Like that, it's like kind of that position that I'm in. I feel real honored to be there, you know. I don't really necessarily look at it as being above anybody or, you know, I look at it as more like just, hey, people like good music. They should hear. I feel like they should hear this, hear the music. You know, that's important for me, for people to hear the music that we're putting out. But I feel like we definitely the consistency and of the quality of what we're releasing is really speaks volumes. And I think that is what has sort of helped push this forward and amass this following of people that we have, you know, because I think there's, you know, there's a lot of labels that kind of come and go, and you know, there's obviously several different reasons for that, but we've managed to sustain I'd like to think can be consistent with what we're doing, even though the music styles have kind of gone through different phases, you could say. There's been kind of different things that we've sort of embraced and started putting out over the years. There's still a lot of similarities, and there's these subtle threads, subtle and not so subtle threads that tie everything together, you know. And I think that's the reason for bringing in different styles of music into the label is really kind of, you know, twofold. Like, for one, I like the music. I'm really into all kinds of different music. I don't want to be limited by just one thing. And I think that it keeps it interesting for people too. It's like if we only released doom metal records, I mean, that, to me, it's like that's very limiting. That's very limiting. I like that music a lot, but I think it's like I don't want to have Italian food every single day of the week. I'd like to throw it in some Mexican here and there, and then like maybe go some Greek here and there. So it's like, having some variety to me is very important, and also sort of to me one of the reasons that this is, the label is still around and people are getting into it, you know.
I did want to ask you about Scott Walker too, where I was like, I want to know everything about that fucking guy, man. It's like Andy and I were talking about it, because we're like, you know, I feel like if I had to, like, I could like get in touch with Dave Grohl. Like, if you're like, dude, you like hat, like if you don't find Dave Grohl, like, I'm gonna kill your parents or whatever, you'd be like, all right, I can like figure this out. But like, I don't feel like I could like track down Scott Walker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely reclusive. That whole experience was very surreal. Yeah. Because, you know, I'd been listening to his records for a while and a huge fan of his work, but you know, he's one of those kind of people or personalities that, you know, you just know that, just don't think there's ever going to be a chance that, first of all, he doesn't play live, so there's no chance for you to see him perform live. And then, you know, getting to meet him just seems like something that's just never going to happen. It was very strange. And it was, you know, we were talking earlier about the way that Sun records records. It's very, you know, sort of in the moment. And then one guy will bring in an idea and then, you know, build upon that. Well, this one was actually done completely different. He had everything completely written, scored, and charted everything.
Oh, dude, he like charts out like weird noises and shit. He's like, here's the symbol for exactly, like banging on meat. Like, oh, all right, cool.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, you've seen the documentary. Yeah. Exactly. So the his musical director was there, and the guy is basically like a conductor of orchestra, conducts orchestras in London, and he works with Scott, and basically him and Scott, he helps Scott get his ideas scored and kind of interprets some of Scott's ideas, and so that in a formal way. So he had everything done for us, and we would basically showed up with our gear, and they had just told us what they wanted us to play, which for us was, we were totally into it, because so we'd never done it before. Plus it was, you know, we're playing with somebody we had a lot of respect for and love his music. But it was interesting because we recorded under the assumption that we were just basically going to be his backing band for his new solo record.
Yeah.
And after the recording session, like kind of near the end of it, it was going so well, and he was actually bringing in songs. He brought out some songs and some ideas that that were just he hadn't finished yet. That were just demo, you know, just he had very rough demos, and we'd finished everything so with a couple days to spare of what was scheduled. So he brought more songs out, but because of the collaboration that we had and what actually happened in the studio and the recording, he decided to not make it a solo record. He decided to make it a collaboration record where both artists were named on the cover of the record, which I thought was really an honor, you know. I mean, he still was really the brains behind it all. I mean, like I said, he wrote all the music, and we weren't allowed to go to the mix session, and we weren't allowed to we never heard or saw the vocals being tracked. What we did the demos that he gave us of the music, he didn't sing on them, but he used a Fender Rhodes
to represent
his voice. Yes. So that's all we had. That's all we had. So really when we left there, you know, it was like, we really had no idea what it was going to be like. They didn't let us leave with any recordings at all. So the next thing I got in the mail was like, here's a rough mix of the album, basically with the vocals like recorded on it. And it was like, whoa, you know, because we'd been listening to those melodies a lot, you know, right. We'd heard them, we knew what they were. So to hear then a voice replace those, the keyboard was very bizarre. And I guess, you know, what we were told was that's how he records everything. But the one thing, there is one thing like it was really cool about that I really thought was awesome was that Keith showed up every day to the studio. We weren't too sure if like we were even going to have much interaction with him at all.
Sure.
But he was there every day. I mean, he didn't stay for the whole day, but he was there for, and that was the thing, like, that's what determined where we recorded what studio we recorded in. It had to be within a 5-minute walk of his house. And or, you know, or close to it, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't drive, and he doesn't want to drive, and he doesn't want anyone to pick him up. He wants to be able to walk from his house to the studio. So luckily he lives in this area that has a lot of amazing studios.
Many options within a 5-minute walk.
Yeah, it was seriously, there was even a studio called Sun. There was like a Sun Studios, like S-U-N. It was S-U-N, not two N's, but so it was, you know, there's this one street there that literally, I'm not joking, they had four different like recording studios, and some of them were
the recording district.
Yeah, it was the recording district of London. It was like very, very strange that he lived there, but so, you know, it was cool, and he was, you know, our interaction with him was it was really cool. It was very friendly, and he had a lot of respect for us and what we were doing. And he thought it was, you know, he had a lot of ideas that he had some ideas that weren't on the demo, and he would try to explain them to us. And we were able to interpret most of those ideas. And he was very excited about that. He's like, man, you know, usually people don't get it, or I'll have to compromise with something that's not what I was hearing in my head. But you guys have been able to help me realize a lot of these ideas, because we literally brought our entire back line, and we brought all these different pedals and all these different guitars, and we wanted to have a lot of options, because we figured there might be an opportunity to make some some really different sounds on this stuff. And that's exactly what he wanted, you know. Like, it's kind of, we were right, we were correct with our intuition there. And it was like, it was cool. You'd be like, well, I've kind of have this idea for like this lead guitar part here, and Steven and I can't play lead at all, really. But the keyboard player, the keyboard player that we play with is like this ripping guitar player as well. He's like, he's one of my favorite guitar players. So, and he's like a Hendrix style guitar player. So, we were like, well, we can't, but Toss can do a ripping lead. And sure enough, just like first take, nailed it, you know, like just how Scott was wanting it. And it was just like, it was kind of like, you know, we were like these, like, you know, we've got like these backup musicians for hire that like had this massive, you know, massive amount of tool, you know, all these tools in our toolboxes to fix, to make everything, to fix everything. It was pretty wild. It was really cool. Like, so by the end of the session, everyone was like, the vibe was very, you know, it was very positive. Everyone's like, wow, this really went well. We're really excited. And I think that's one of the reasons he decided to rename the album, and involve us as the artist as well. So it was cool. It was a really cool experience, and it was, to me, honestly, that was like, I was just there to absorb and learn. I went there just a sponge, you know. I wanted to soak up as much as I possibly could, because it's such a very rare opportunity, you know. Yeah. And so I learned a lot, and I tried to be pretty quiet and just do my thing, and you know, whereas usually in some recording session, very vocal, and I have specific vision and ideas for things. But this time I was like, all right, let's just let someone else steer the ship, and I'm going to learn some things here. And you know, it was dude, this is funny though. You'll love this. So when we first met, he's like, oh, so, you know, he's very shy and he's very quiet. He's like, hey, so you run the Southern Lord label. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. He's like, man, you put out that Nails record? Like, yeah, I really like Nails. They're great. Like, that was the first thing you said to me. It was like,
that's incredible. Oh.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Dude,
like,
of all the things Scott Walker is on B9. He's posting on the Bridge 9 board.
I thought that was like the most bizarre, you know, like of all the things that we put out, you know, that's what he like was really into. He's like, man, I love that new record you put out. I think it was Abandon All Life had come out.
Dude, you know what though? That's like John Peel though, right? Where it's like, you know, he's this music freak guy, and he's just like, dude, this Napalm Death stuff is insane. Like, let me expose this to every like person in Britain. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Good job.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, yeah, totally. That's a good analogy. I mean, you know, I think, and that's kind of when he said that, then I was kind of like, you know what, this guy's probably a lot like us, just a music freak, you know, and loves to hear new music, and it doesn't matter, you know, whether it's Nails or it's Diamondica Loss or whatever. It's like, you know, it's about whether the connection's made there and he likes the music. It doesn't matter what kind of style. Or it was like that right there. I was like, oh man, this is going to be cool. We're going to get along fine. You know what I mean? The guy gets it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I love that story. So yeah, I want to be respectful of your time. So let's wrap this thing up.
Okay.
Is there any sort of last things you want people to check out? Places they can find out more about Southern Lord on the internet, Sun, Goat Snake, all that type of stuff.
Well, I would just say, I mean, as far as locally there, you got great, some amazing record stores, Reckless Records, of course. And, but you know, of course, if you want to get the stuff directly from the label, it's southernlord.com. We've got a store there. It's an exciting year. We got an exciting year coming up this year. We got a lot of great releases, including this Like Rats record, which I'm really excited about. And we got a new record coming from Power Trip, which is a band that really exciting, new, amazing band. Totally stoked to work with those guys. And then come see our bands when we play in Chicago. Sun's playing in Chicago at the Talia Hall on June 7th.
Yeah, I have that in my calendar.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It should come down. It should be really good. We're playing with two other really new Southern Lord bands. One's called Big Brave. It's a Canadian band. They're amazing. And then the other guitar player in Sun, his little brother, is in the other opening band. They're called Hissing, and it's like a kind of like Autopsy Incantation style death metal band. They're incredible. These are super young dudes, but they're really, really, really good. So it's going to be cool, like a really kind of a diverse bill and really cool show. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. That sounds good.